Hello and welcome to another episode of Tech Enthusiast. I'm Neil.
I'm Simon, and this week is a special about the Wired 2015 conference, which we both attended last week. It was fantastic. And we did a pre-recorded little spot about day one, so we'll just quickly cut to our pre-recorded spot. Now, we did intend to record a day two live at the event, but there was a slight problem in the fact that I lost my voice.
Yeah.
I was struggling on the first recording. By the second recording, it was just gone.
Yeah. Really.
So day two then, who was your favourite speaker, Neil?
My favourite speaker. I think my favourite talk was probably the linguistics talk by Professor Sophie Scott featuring the beatboxer Reeps One.
Because I can't see, I actually thought Reeps One was using a looping pedal.
Yeah, I remember you saying to me afterwards.
He's so talented. I was listening, because often with beatboxes, when you hear them layering it, it's like, oh yeah, the looping with the pedal. Yeah. So I was waiting for the bit where it sounded layered, and I was like, yeah, that's layered. He's doing that layered.
Yeah, no, he was really, really talented, and he started off. It just started the talk. You weren't sure what was coming, really. He started beatboxing, and then Sophie Scott came on stage and started to talk about how she's been studying linguistics and how she thought speech was sort of the be all and end all, and then realised from listening to beatboxers, oh my goodness, they're doing something that we haven't even begun to think about properly.
Yeah, they demonstrated through MRI making sounds, making beats, or yeah, perhaps creating the vocals that Reeps One is capable of.
Yeah.
He can independently use three different parts.
Yeah, he was using the back of his throat, his tongue, and his lips to create three different sounds.
And that's why I thought he was layering.
Yeah.
Because he was so talented, and it was just incredible to see what someone was capable of and then see it live. Well, it wasn't live, it's pre-recording MRI, but then see what happens in the MRI.
Yeah, to see the MRI scan. It was really, really interesting anyway. And then there was a point where like everybody in the crowd was just like, oh my God, because he combined these two sounds together, which in the MRI you could see his tongue, really, really clearly see his tongue and his lips just clearly doing something completely different at the same time. It was pretty mind-blowing, to be honest. It was really entertaining.
I think a lot of that content is actually on YouTube, so we'll have to dig out some links
cool.
In fact, all the talks from the conference, I do believe, come online eventually.
Yeah.
But my favourite... I think I had two favourites. Can you have two favourites, one favourite?
Yeah, of course you can.
My top two were... Oh, is it McDuff? What's his name?
I want to say Daniel.
Is it Daniel?
I'm looking now.
I think it was...
It was definitely a D name.
Yeah.
Scrolling. Oh, it would be right near the bottom, wouldn't he?
Well, you know,
Daniel. It was Daniel McDuff.
Yeah, because he basically gave a talk on they'd created a system that was able to just it's a computer-based vision system, so you could detect people's emotions.
Yeah,
which they did a live demonstration, which is always interesting, but then the fact that it actually worked.
Yeah, it did.
And they're able to identify quite a few different emotions as well.
Yeah, they got a laptop with the software running on it and the camera, obviously, in the laptop, and then they put that up on the big screen. And the camera was on somebody's face, and just by the side of their face were a list of kind of facial movements. So there were things like eyebrow furrow, pucker, chin drop, things like that. And as the software was recognizing those different things, they would be highlighted on screen, and there could be two or three highlighted at the same time. So it was able to identify that there was more going on there than just the one thing. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's got some fantastic sort of applications. And, you know, I approached him afterwards and quickly mentioned that it could be something interesting for the visually impaired, because, you know, losing that sort of emotion detection in social situations is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know if someone's smiling, don't know if someone's frowning. Yeah, you do lose a sizable chunk, and I suppose it really does affect your emotional intelligence, because you are losing a part of the conversation, the unspoken conversation. So yeah, fantastic technology, and I was amazed just how far along it actually was.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive to watch.
And my other favourite talk, and I really should have written down some names, was the lady from MIT who demonstrated the reactive clothing.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Now, this to me seemed just straight up sci-fi, because she was using a bacteria which was woven into the fabric to make an active fabric. Because, you know, now I wear sort of sweat wicking tops, you know, and it draws the sweat out. But this fabric was able to change its shape and vents could open.
Yeah.
And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, was she actually on day one?
I think she was on day one.
She was on day one. So, yeah, that's a mistake. That was in our pre-recorded bit.
Never mind.
So day two then, the other top speaker for me then was probably the gentleman about education.
Yes.
It was a guy from Brazil who decided to try and tackle education, and the way he was doing it was just fantastic. It was being able to create almost tasks, classes, just an entire curriculum on an individual basis. So children or students, because it wasn't just children, was it? Because it even did mature students.
Yeah.
But people could identify areas of education they were struggling with, and then this computer program could then create a curriculum which would assist them in their particular areas of focus to improve their overall performance.
Yeah.
And that really did seem like the future of education for me.
It did. It was really interesting, just the way it kind of identified kind of gaps in knowledge, and it was able to as well. It sounded like the way it worked is if you had an issue like with learning about something, it was smart enough to go, okay, well, usually if that's a problem, it's because of this as well. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just going, okay, well, you've got a problem with percentages. That was the example he gave, actually, wasn't it? Percentages. So we'll just teach you about percentages. It then went, well, if you're struggling with percentages, the chances are it's because you're struggling with fractions, and therefore we're going to up your knowledge on fractions as well. And the improvements that it sounded like they were making.
Yeah, I think it was 20% improvement.
Yeah.
20% is massive.
It was.
In education.
It was really, really impressive.
And what I really liked about it is, you know, I think teachers are going to be worried when they hear things like this. Oh, you know, it means we're all going to be out of jobs because this computer program's going to do it all for us. But this still took place within the classroom.
Yeah.
And then the teacher went around and assisted the student on what every particular area of the curriculum they were individually struggling on.
Yeah.
Moving them away from this stand at the front of the class and trying to get everyone on the same page. And if you fall slightly behind, well, you're left behind because you've got to go with the majority of the class.
Yeah.
So it really did seem like the teacher was freed up to offer insight on a one-to-one basis, which is perhaps what from teachers.
More of a kind of wander in the class and help the child out with whatever they're struggling with at that time, rather than help trying to make sure that the slower kids keep up and trying to keep the kids who are managing it with no problems entertained. They're able to work at their own pace.
It definitely seemed like the way education should work with the technology we have now.
Yeah.
The only upsetting thing is when me and you looked into it, it wasn't available in the UK, was it?
No.
It was Brazil only right now.
The guy was called Claudio Sasaki. And there was an app, wasn't there? A mobile app with games on it, which were educational games, and it was called Geekie. G-E-E-K-I-E.
Yeah. Is it?
But yeah, I found that really, really interesting as well. And I was, you know, because there was a part of me being a dad, I was like, oh, that'd be fantastic for my kids. But at the same time, I was thinking, do you know what? There's gaps in my knowledge. I bet there's things it could teach me. And while he was talking, I got my phone out and I was like Googling it. And I'm like, oh, .br. Oh, it's not in English. Oh, man.
I was trying
to find equivalents for the UK, but I've not been able to. I'll have to have another deep dive and try and find something that's similar-ish.
It definitely seems like something that should be there.
Yeah,
I can't believe that there isn't some young startup in the UK really pushing this forward.
Yeah.
It seemed like such an obvious, great idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Needs to be action. The other interesting talks for me were there was some really smart 3D printing in terms of they demonstrated a print job that started the job as one material and then it was a gradient and it turned into another material. So at the start of the print job, it was clear acrylic, and by the end of the print job, it was black rubber. But what was so impressive is there was that gradient in between, so it was one piece. It didn't stop and start. It was just gradually introduced throughout the print run.
Yeah.
To make materials that have never been able to exist. And that for me was just, that was definitely sci-fi. It was just...
Yeah, very much so. Was that was that Francis Bitone? Was that that guy?
I think it was, yes, because he's named the studio after himself in New York, hasn't he?
Yeah, that was the guy.
Like you would. You've got to name it after yourself.
Well, of course you have, yeah.
If it's your stuff.
Staying on the 3D printing thing, one of the other ones was people that were 3D printing human tissue.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't like to call it 3D printing, does he?
Well, no, he didn't.
He likes to call it bioprinting because once it's finished printing,
it
then sort of, continues to grow.
Yeah, it has to kind of,
because it's living material.
Exactly. It's not done. It's not like it's printed and then you can kind of just take that off. But, I mean, it was a guy called Gabor Forgax and... I mean, the type of 3D printing that he was using, even though he doesn't like to call that, was extrusion 3D printing, which is the most common 3D printing that you get, really. It's the same theory. It's just using something completely different to the kind of plastics that people are printing in when they're making small little projects. But it was really, really fascinating.
Yeah, it was definitely incredible, you know, to see these things created. Again, sci-fi.
Yeah.
A lot of the technology we saw over those 2 days seems so sci-fi and so far ahead of what I've known to exist. And wow, it's all there. It's happening. And one of the other really interesting sort of starts was the coffee beans.
Oh, yeah.
That was David, wasn't
about
it?
That. Yeah, it was.
So that was some young guy in the UK at the age of 23.
Oh, so irritating.
I know. He'd got his architecture degree and then decided to look into how he can sort of utilise used coffee beans as fuel. A strange path from architecture. But yeah, it was basically taking used coffee beans from sort of like the instant coffee plants and large coffee chains and then turn it into two different fuel sources, one being liquid biodiesel. And the other being a solid fuel that you can burn in sort of wood burning and coal burning ovens.
Yeah, they were pellets, weren't they? That you know, or obviously fuel pellets. That was a guy called Arthur Kay, but like you say, he was very, very young. Obviously, just really, really clever guy. Had an idea, ran with it, and is now doing great guns with it.
I think that's just
using used coffee grounds.
The power to think of the idea, then execute.
Yeah.
You know, so it's execution, execution, execution. And at 23, to think, yeah, I'm going to just set up a factory.
Yeah.
That's not like a little, you know, tech startup where you create an app in your bedroom.
Yeah, or like a bedroom DJ or something. You're going out there and actually going, yeah, I'm just going to get some land and set up a factory.
Yeah, set up this big sort of like logistics system.
Yeah.
M massive, massive project and so impressive. And yeah, he's 2 years into it now, he's 25, and he seems to be doing quite well out of it. I think he reckon he
Definitely.
processed 50,000 tons, was it?
Yeah. Which is, yeah, it's a decent amount. Say he's only been going a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's one of those things as well where he was saying, a lot of the big coffee chains are actually paying people to get rid of this waste. So we come in and we're like, do you know what? We'll get rid of it for you for cheaper. And then they're turning it into something else and making money off it.
Yeah,
Genius.
it's an incredible idea. Incredible idea. And then I suppose the celebrity of the day was the lady from Pussy Riot. Is it? I can't say his first name.
No, she, Nadia from Pussy Riot, basically.
Yeah, because neither of us can remember
No,
or
it's written in
pronounce
front of
her
me and I still
surname.
can't say it.
Yeah. But no, that was interesting to hear from someone from Pussy Riot.
Yeah,
I didn't
she
know
was
what
talking
to
about digital
expect.
activism, wasn't she?
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe I expected a bit more content from that. I think I just expected a bit more.
Yeah, I think she was speaking in English, obviously, which isn't her first language, and I think she wasn't struggling with it, but she obviously wasn't finding it the easiest thing either. Yeah, I know what you mean, because I expected her to go into more about it was more of a general talk rather than talking about Pussy Riot.
Yeah, it wasn't really her story.
No.
We didn't hear anything about, what she'd been through or
She
anything.
touched briefly on the fact that she'd been in prison,
Yeah, in a
which would,
passing sentence, not
yeah, it
really.
really was. It was more about what digital activism is, what it can achieve, and what it should be trying to do, rather than this is, what we went through trying to do what we tried to do. But it was still quite interesting.
Oh yeah,
And
it
then we
so
were,
sounds like she's doing fantastic things.
yeah,
She's
and
doing
then
some
we.
incredible work.
And we were treated to the premiere of the new Pussy Riot song and video.
Oh
The
yeah, she's not mince her
video,
words in that.
she really doesn't. No, she says rude, naughty swear words. The video was shot at Banksy's Dismaland.
Yeah, well, I hear it looks interesting, but obviously, yeah, the visuals escape me, Neil.
Yeah, but yeah, it was an interesting talk. She was pretty cool.
Yeah, all the talks were fantastically interesting. Really got me thinking about how artificial intelligence can be applied to a lot of different fields.
Yeah.
Because the early morning session did touch a lot on artificial intelligence, and there's so many areas it can be applied to and to massively improve systems.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely hoping to do something with artificial intelligence in the next few months.
One of the things that I sort of struggled with a little bit, there was a talk by a guy called Niven Narain, who his title down is AI Drug Discoverer. And he was talking about how they were using artificial intelligence and mapping of people's bodies and of cancers particularly, like literally mapping out the root way of the cancer itself to create drugs that were targeted at the cancer, rather than, and I'm paraphrasing here, but rather than basically just guessing what might fix it and then trying that. And I was just like, what? Are you telling me that's not how drugs work? You don't find out how it works and then try to counter out that. You just kind of go, I wonder if radiation will work.
Well,
Let's give it a
you
go.
know what's scary about drugs, drug trials?
Yeah.
They don't have to get 100%.
No.
It's just over 50%.
What, the one thing that did get me a little bit about his talk was he was really kind of going, oh yeah, people talk about, these were his words again, but I'm kind of reading between the lines. Oh, people talk about Big Pharma making all this money, but look how much it costs us to research these drugs. And he was proper like, yeah, it's really, really expensive.
Yeah, $2.6 billion to go from stage one to stage three.
And then it not necessarily get made into a drug. And I'm not saying it isn't expensive, because clearly it is. However, they're clearly making their money back.
They are absolutely making their money back.
Yeah.
I suppose if you told Apple or any major tech firm, it's only ever going to cost you $2.6 billion in R&D, and you'll be able to sell this for the next 50 years, they go, deal.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a bargain.
Yeah, completely.
So, yeah, I think we were supposed to kind of feel... I think it was using that number to say it's a big number, we can make it lower.
Yeah, because we can target things better. But like I said, there was that part of me that was just like, surely this is stuff you should have already been doing. You're talking about this like it's innovative to try and find out what the problem is before you try and fix it.
If you develop a drug that only has to work in just over 50% of people,
that's
the benchmark you've set yourself.
Yeah.
It only has to work just over half the time.
Yeah.
And these are the drugs that are on the market.
It's crazy.
You know, these aren't the drugs that fail. These are the ones that we take. So, yeah, maybe using artificial intelligence to increase the targeting of drug design, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to make so much sense. But I suppose, you know, these technologies haven't existed for that long.
No, that's true.
It is new technology. It's great to see it being applied to so many areas so quickly, really. But any other talks that piqued your interest day two, Neil?
I thought the food stuff was interesting to a certain extent. The fact that we got a bag full of weird things to taste that all tasted weird.
Yeah, to quickly cover the food stuff, Neil. The food stuff, we had a talk from some chefs and a flavour scientist from Noma.
Yeah.
And Noma is generally ranked as the world's best restaurant.
Yeah.
So that was who came along to give us a talk, to put it a little bit into perspective. And yeah, we got some free samples. Didn't like any of them.
I don't know. I think that pressed fermented garlic strip tasted nice.
You're right. Because the garlic, basically, we got one clove of garlic that had fermented for 2 months and then pressed into what can be sort of said look and felt like an old piece of chewing gum.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
That you'd stuck under the table for 2 months and then peeled it off and go, oh, yeah, that's some good garlic. I'm glad I travelled halfway around the world to eat here. But it did bring out some unique flavours that I'd never tasted in garlic before.
Yeah, it did, because it had a sweetness to it, didn't it?
And they're saying that the future of cooking is fermenting.
Mm.
Oh, my God, that's just reminding me about perhaps the craziest talk of the day. Yeah. The two architects.
Oh, God.
So two architects who were apparently inspired by the food process at Noma to create pieces of architecture. But they delivered it like a comedy act.
Well,
I didn't even know if the products were real.
I know, because it was a lot of video stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, there was basically a straight man who was a British guy called Christopher Matthews. And then there was a very, very over-the-top American... Was he American? His accent was a little unusual.
It was one of those accents where I think he was American, but he's lived somewhere for so long, it started to affect his accent.
Yeah, he was called Christopher Pierce, and he was larger than life.
It was incredible.
He was, yeah. He was very entertaining to listen to.
You're going to have to describe these. So describe to me the one that floated down the river.
Right. Basically, what was it they used?
Was it a mango?
Yeah, I think it was. They basically got a piece of material, which I can't remember what material it was now. But they basically smashed two fruits into it. I think it was a mango, which caused this weird shape. And then they basically sculpted that in an enormous, huge thing, put it on a barge, and they've been floating it down a river going around in a circuit.
As a living farm.
It was so bizarre. I can't even remember half the stuff they said because it was just so bizarre. Because
it was a living farm that when it was grown, they deflated and then foraged things from the farm. Everything they built, because then they also made a building out of an unstable building material.
Yeah.
With the intention that it had to constantly be rebuilt.
Yes. It was,
I didn't quite get that one.
No, I think some of the places that lost me with some of these talks were art stuff, because it just went straight over my head. And this was one of those things. I didn't follow quite what they were saying, why they were doing what they were doing, and what purpose it served, if any. But it was very entertaining.
The presentation was just humorous.
Yeah. I'd love to describe what was on the videos, but honestly, I really don't know.
I think they seemed to struggle. They had to use the videos.
Yeah, to describe. Yeah, it was very, very difficult to follow, even with the videos. Maybe to somebody a bit more artistically minded, it wasn't. But to me, it was just no idea what you're talking about. But you're delivering it with some passion, my friend.
But I suppose beyond the talk, there was also some other great highlights at the event, because they allow, or should I say, some sort of technology partners come along and do presentations of their products within a hall, don't they?
Yeah.
So, for example, we got to try and taste a few products made from crickets.
Yeah.
Because we were trying cricket flour. So we were eating was it chocolate cake? I think it was chocolate cake, wasn't it?
Yeah, some chocolate cake.
So yeah, chocolate cake made from cricket flour. I thought it had a slight taste.
I don't know. I thought it was all right.
Could you imagine eating it all the time?
It certainly wouldn't bother me.
Wouldn't bother you. Now, I tried the protein bar, but you didn't try the protein bar.
I've not tried the protein bar yet. No, I've got it hanging around somewhere. I've just not tried it yet.
Now, the protein bar was disgusting. I took one bite and I spat it. Oh, man, it did not taste good.
No.
It was absolutely not for me.
Fair enough.
But you got to test some pretty impressive kit.
Yeah, there was obviously it's quite big at the moment, because there's lots of products coming to market at the moment, virtual reality stuff. The first thing I had to go on really was, it was using Oculus, but the demonstration wasn't by Oculus. It was by a developer who I don't recall the name of, which I feel bad about. But it was a downhill mountain biking simulator.
Yeah.
And the bike was hooked up so that it was throwing you left and right and tipping you back and tipping you forwards as you went down the track. And I'd seen it from a distance for a while. We walked past it a few times and it looked really, really interesting, and I was quite looking forward to having a go on it. Unfortunately, because it was a Bluetooth connection they were using, when I got to it, it was janky, really, really badly janky. You're getting chucked around by the bike anyway, but there were some really unnatural movements coming from the bike to the point that I thought I was going to fall off.
Yeah. Until then, I didn't realise how much interference Bluetooth appears to cause.
No, I didn't either. But yeah, and on screen as well, it wasn't a smooth pitch. You know, the frame rate was really, it was just janky, really, really bad. But they obviously recognised that, and other people had kind of, when they fell off the track or crashed or whatever, they'd say, okay, that's you done. But with me, they tried to reset it sort of two or three times.
Yeah.
Because it just was not working. And in the end, I just gave up because I was really uncomfortable sat on this bike that was trying to buck me off. And and I was sweating a bit because I got this headset on as well.
You had a better experience with Sony VR though, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't think they were there on the first day. I think they were just there on the second.
Yeah.
And because we thought we'd seen everything, and then we were wandering around, I'm like, oh no, there's another virtual reality thing over here. And it was PlayStation VR, what was formerly known as Morpheus, now given the far more boring name of PlayStation VR, but it makes sense for the PlayStation product.
Yeah.
That I really enjoyed. It worked really, really well. They gave me a talk beforehand, and they were saying, you know, you start off sat in this chair. One thing they said to me actually was, there's a character in it, and they were like, he's supposed to be a really big character. You're going to tower over him. Because I'm 6'7". So they were like, we've made him to be like 6'2", 6'3". So he's imposing. You're going to be taller than him. So, but they said, okay, so you sit down on the chair and then we're going to strap you in. You've got PlayStation Move controllers in each hand. The trigger buttons are the only ones that work. And the PlayStation Move controllers are your hands. So when you want to pick something up, you put your hand towards it, pull the trigger, and that grabs. If you let go of the trigger, that will let go of the object,
yeah.
With the exception of the gun. Once you pick the gun up, it will stick to your hand, and then the trigger is clearly the trigger for the gun.
Yeah.
And they also said to me, there's a natural point in the demo where you will stand up. When you stand up, we will move the chair away that you were sat in. So don't sit down, basically. So I was like, okay, right, fair enough, prepared for it. And they strapped me into the headset, put headphones on, and then that was it. I was in the world. And even though it was a really, really kind of busy, kind of hustly-bustly place, I didn't hear much. And once the characters started talking, that was it. I was immersed within that world. And this guy that was supposed to be this big guy, he was an imposing character. He was a heavy. He was basically threatening you. And then he's about to torture you with a blowtorch when his mobile phone rings.
Inconvenient. Should put on silence.
I know. So then he starts talking to somebody on the phone. And he says, oh, this is your lucky day. It's for you. And then he holds the phone out in front of you. So then you've got to, and all the time I was doing this, I was looking around me because I was aware that I could kind of look around. I was trying to take as much of the world in as I could.
Yeah.
But then he held the phone out in front of me. So I reached towards it with my hand, pulled the trigger on the PlayStation Move controller, and it took the phone off him. And then as I was bringing the phone towards my head, which obviously wasn't real, I heard the guy had started talking before the phone got to my ear,
yeah.
And you could hear it like coming towards you.
Oh, wow.
So that was really well done. It was actually like, you know, it was a physical object.
Yeah.
And then basically he says something to you about, you need to tell me what happened, and you go into this flashback sequence. So in this flashback sequence, you're in a darkened room, in front of a desk, and the desk is kind of rounded around you, so it's kind of keeping you within the bounds of the desk area.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't sure how far I could explore, but I was looking around me to try and take the room in. And then the phone is now gone because you're in this flashback sequence, but the guy's still talking to you. And he said something about, where is it? You know, there's an object you need to find. So I started opening drawers on this desk, and there were some cupboards on it as well. And the first drawer I opened, there was a gun and like three magazines in it. It was like a pistol and three magazines. So I picked up the gun and then in one hand, almost picked it up with my right hand, and then went, Neil, you're left-handed. So, and it would have been glued to my right hand then, so I'd have been stuffed. But yeah, so I picked it with my left hand, and then I picked up one of the magazines with the right hand and just kind of put my two hands together, and you saw like the magazine go in, the clip go into the gun.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was just like, oh, that's really cool. And then you see there's lights flashing around outside, and somebody's about to come in through the door, and the guy in your ear warns you somebody's about to come in. So, and he says, duck behind the desk. So I went to duck behind the desk, but I was so immersed. In fact, I think the word that's popular within virtual reality is there was presence. I felt like I was present in that world, that to duck down behind the desk, I tried to put my hand on the desk to support myself as I went down.
Yeah.
And obviously the desk doesn't exist. So I kind of fell a little bit to my knees and was like, oh, you idiot. People will have seen that and known what you were doing. Well done. And then basically people start coming into the room and you have to shoot them. The only jank that really came out of it was because I was told there's a camera, a stereoscopic camera in front of you that's tracking you as well. Mm. And because there were people like on a balcony that I was shooting at, my hand was going up above the range of the stereoscopic camera to try and shoot these people. So I ended up having to kind of duck down a little bit and like, yeah. I felt like I was shooting off to the right when actually I was shooting in front of me.
I suppose you are far bigger than the intended audience.
And obviously they weren't in the perfect space for it either. But yeah, it was, and it worked really well. And once I'd killed everybody, there were a couple of cupboards and drawers that I hadn't explored yet. And I opened this one drawer up and there was a key in it. So I picked up the key and I knew that one of the little cupboards had a lock on it. So I went straight for that one, opened it up, reached inside and there was something that looked like a big diamond, grabbed hold of it. And then that was it. That was the end of the demo. But it worked really, really well. And other than that one bit where I was too tall for the range of the stereoscopic cameras, it worked flawlessly. It was fantastic. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, when you came away, you did say, you know, it was far more immersive than the other VR. And
yeah. I mean, I had a bad experience with that other thing, and that wasn't the fault of Oculus. That was the fault of, you know, the software that was running and the Bluetooth stuff. And, you know, it wasn't any kind of representation of the Oculus system at all, but it was a poor experience. But I think it was very situational.
Yeah. Unfortunate, really, because they couldn't really show off what the technology was capable of due to the situation. Well, you know, this is why live demos are always tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there was a really pretty cool piece of tech for me called Give Vision.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool because imagine if people know what Google Glass is like. So it's like wearing a pair of glasses with a small computer on the right arm of the glasses. And what it basically did is identified objects you held in front of it. So it was made for blind people at the supermarket or in the kitchen at home. So you could hold up like a tin of soup or some baked beans or something to pack it, and it tells you what the object is. So, yeah, quite impressive. I think as the database grows, it was something that becomes more impressive.
Yeah.
A few of the other capabilities, if you read in a magazine, you know, you can open the magazine and it will just begin to read the article to you. But rather clever, it doesn't use OCR. It was pulling the article from the internet. But again, you know, you can only get like a 10-minute demo, can't you, in these places? And it's quite noisy. And on something that relies heavily so much on audio, it's very tough. So I think we're going to go along and visit Give Vision in the next few weeks and do a bit of a special podcast and get some video of this this kit in action. Because, yeah, it's great to see the sort of the wearable tech is still moving forward, even with Google Glass being in a bit of a holding pattern.
Yeah.
It's nice to see people are still working on it because it wasn't actually glass, it was from another company, so that's something I think we're going to cover slightly more in depth on a future episode. Now, one of the other stands, Neil, that we bought, well, I got told off for touching it.
Oh, yeah.
There was the Williams Formula E. It was just parts of the car, wasn't it?
It was parts of the engine. I think there was the battery.
Oh, it was the KERS I tried touching.
It was the KERS, and it was just like individual. But it was a weird setup because there was no. You'd expect there to be like pictures or like a lot of places had like banks of video, like screens with stuff on, but it wasn't. It was literally just here's a bit of a car. Here's another bit of a car.
It wasn't even roped off or anything, was it?
No, it wasn't.
It was just a piece of a car on a pedestal. So I went up to touch it. Love F1, love Formula E.
Yeah.
And we got told off. So she didn't even attempt to talk to us, did she?
No.
She just told us off and then walked off.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, then we'll walk away and we'll go over to this table over here where this guy lets us touch everything. So there. I was, oh, that really disappointed me, that I just get told off.
Yeah.
I felt like a school child again, being told off, don't touch. But the other tent we went to was actually really cool because it was the BBC Micro.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm kind of looking forward to, actually. You know, at first I was a bit disappointed that they didn't run with a Raspberry Pi. They went with their own custom hardware.
Yeah.
But the idea that a million are going to be given away to 12-year-olds as kits to do things in the classroom.
That's going to be awesome.
Fantastic. The only bit that did worry me ever so slightly is the fact that the teachers get them in December and then the kids get them in January.
Yeah. Not giving the teachers much time to get their heads around what they're going to be teaching the kids.
Yeah. And for teachers, I've worked in school. I know how little a lot of sort of the IT and computing teachers actually know about that subject.
Yeah.
It's minimal.
Yeah. They've got the lesson plan. Don't deviate too much.
Yeah, here's how you use Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be very difficult to do it in a classroom setting without the right education for the teachers. Because, you know, whenever we rolled out anything new, we'd come up with a great system that, all right, is going to vastly improve things for the kids.
Yeah.
The biggest problem is always training the teachers.
Mm, definitely.
We always massively struggled. Because if you can't train the teacher, how's the teacher expected to then
to teach the kids? Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
It does. And, you know, the argument is we always wanted to teach them during the holidays.
Mm.
But teachers don't work holidays.
No.
So they wouldn't come in.
Funny that.
So then when he left, what time he left with to train them?
Yeah.
You don't have any time to train them. They have a teacher's training day here and there.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
not
only a couple
time.
Of days a year spread
yeah,
out, isn't it?
It's so. Not enough time. And no. I really do. I hope it's going to work. But I think it's going to work off the back of these kids being interested enough to do it at home and looking on the internet.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to deliver enough in the classroom, which is...
It's a shame.
It's a massive shame. Although, not to spoil Christmas for certain boys and girls that I know, but I did pick up some of their kits to hand out as Christmas presents.
Yeah. They were doing other things as well, weren't they? They got their own kit as well, but they'd done a couple of kits that used BBC Micros.
Yeah, there was quite a few kits. I think on the website they got quite a lot of different kits, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I bought a kit that's suitable for 4+.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. 4+, it can already get them into doing little electronic projects. Fantastic.
Pretty awesome.
But overall, massively enjoyed Wired.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest. I'd looked down the kind of lineup of speakers and was like, oh.
Yeah.
All right, okay. But then nearly all of them were so engaging as speakers that you just couldn't help but be interested and excited by what they were talking about.
Yeah, a lot of them were truly practiced in the art of speaking.
Yeah.
So they can just deliver so well.
Mm.
It's a 20-minute captivating talk. And you can tell the ones that are on the circuit.
Yeah.
And you can tell the ones that aren't.
Yeah, definitely.
The ones that are on the circuit are just fantastic. It's engaging. I only hope we can make it to Wired 2016, Neil.
That would be awesome.
We'll have to see how Tech Enthusiast goes. I'm sure we can get an invite. But have you, you know, just to sort of get back to our normal programming, have you got a favourite sort of tech news of the week?
It's been a pretty quiet week, actually.
It's still mobile season. That's the problem.
Oh, no. No, nothing's coming to my mind.
I've got a good one for you, Neil.
Go for it.
Okay, it's from a company called Ember.
Right.
They've created a travel coffee mug that when you pour your coffee into it, it will cool it to your preferred temperature.
Oh.
And then, hang on, it gets better. And then keep it at that temperature for 4 hours.
Shut up and take my money.
Seriously, right? It's so impressive how they've done it. In the walls of the mug, they have a wax-like material.
Right.
And that absorbs energy through heat and melts. And then in the bottom, there's a heating plate. Now, the heating plate can only last for 2 hours. So the heating plate kicks in first to keep it warm.
Right.
And then once the battery runs out, the heat is then transferred from the wax light material back into the coffee.
How much?
It's not cheap.
I had a feeling it wouldn't be. It's a coffee mug you need to charge.
I think it's around... you can control it through your mobile phone as well. But yeah, it's like I think it's around $129 or something.
Ugh, crikey.
But the company store is saying that this is the first of many products.
Right.
Because he wants to redesign the kitchen because he's suggesting that so many products in the kitchen allow food to cool too quickly.
Mm.
And there should be temperature control on your actual things like plates and bowls and things like that.
Yeah.
So he's trying to engineer them so they look like a normal plate, but there's a lot of technology inside it.
Mm.
Because the travel mug looks like a normal travel mug.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They're engineering products that look like everyday products, but crammed with a lot of tech. But yeah, it made me want a new travel coffee mug.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, how much technology can you put into a mug? I want.
It kind of reminds me of Petzl climbing gear, who were just like, some of this climbing gear is really complicated. Why don't we just make it simpler and make it look cooler? So they made the harnesses which were originally designed for kids, with just the pull cords that tighten stuff up and things like that. But yeah, just taking stuff that's been around for years and done the exact same way for years and going, hang on a minute, we can do this better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly the philosophy of Ember.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely fascinating. I'm definitely going to keep an eye on them and see what the next product is, considering this is the first of supposedly many products.
Yeah, cool.
That's definitely my favourite tech news of the week. So excellent. Next week, we're going to be back to our normal programming.
Yeah. We've had a couple of weeks off.
I know, it's been tough, you know. I can't even remember.
Wired and just life getting in the way, basically.
I think we were both ill was the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd lost my voice by the time we'd got down to Wired, which made Wired interesting, because, yeah, couldn't talk. But back to the normal programming. Yeah. Looking forward to next week's show. So... I've been Simon.
I've been Neil. Thanks for listening to Tech Enthusiast.